Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined, of course, by Travis Ryer. You can get all kinds of super content at Ryer on YouTube. Give it a like, give it a subscribe, super stuff there. And, of course, the home of Talking Tide. We're going to be recapping Alabama's disastrous loss to Indiana in a CFP quarterfinal here. In this final Sunday nighter of the season, Travis, here we are, Jan 4, wrapping things up football-wise. Touch on Alabama basketball on the back end a little bit, maybe a little bit more on the pending CFP matchups. But, Travis, first, I guess we call this an autopsy on a 38-3 bludgeoning at the hands of the Bloomington Hoosiers in the Rose Bowl. My goodness.
Yeah, you got to see it firsthand, up close and in person out there in Pasadena. Started out okay, right? Talked about it here on the channel on Aftermath and in the last few days. Alabama moved the football a little bit on offense, didn't go down and get points, and then, you know, made Indiana, at least for a moment, seem uncomfortable. Brought some different looks, and I'm sure that Kirk Cignetti and that offensive staff had maybe necessarily prepared for, but give the Hoosiers a lot of credit. They did what championship teams do or don't do. They don't blink. They stick to who they are and what has gotten them to this point, and it was more than good enough over 60 minutes.
38-3, the final score. Alabama pretty much dominated. The defensive line versus the Indiana offensive line was not close, Travis. The center got an offensive MVP of the Rose Bowl. I mean, what's that about? They were 50 for 215 on the ground as a team, and really went to town on that Alabama run defense. Fernando Mendoza was fine. You know, he played well. He was efficient. He was mistake-free. He was fearless. He was all those things. But it's not like he lit him up like a Matt Stafford or something. You know what I mean? It was a good but not great quarterback performance. But when you're running the ball for 215, you don't need your quarterback to be great.
No, when you're able to be balanced and, again, not flinch because you know that you have that capability, boy, that's a calming influence when things maybe don't go your way, especially early in the game. And you know, that's where Indiana's at right now. I've said it in the last week or so, couple weeks, that, you know, Indiana's kind of playing a 2009, 2011 version of Nick Saban football at Alabama. And it's working just fine for the Hoosiers. You know, a couple of backs that can hurt you like Alabama's had in the past, a sort of two-headed approach to the running back position, really good, precise offensive line play. Efficiency as much as anything else at the quarterback position. I mean, when you talk about, you know, Mendoza, you're right. I mean, he only threw it 18 times in the game, but he completed 16 of them, you know, and so those numbers looked really good by the end of the game. And just a team that won't beat themselves. You know, they know who they are. They play to that. And you're going to have to play at a high level to beat them.
Two sacks for Alabama on Indiana's first offensive possession. So right out of the gate, Alabama looked like they had something for them defensively. But as you noted, Mendoza only threw 18 balls. He only needed to throw 18 balls because of how well they ran the ball. And because they ran it so well and needed to throw so little, that mitigates the impact that Alabama's pass rush was going to be able to have in this game.
It did. And Indiana goes on to convert 9 of 14 on thirds. Red zone after, a field goal there. In the first half, really good in the red zone as well for Indiana as far as touchdown conversions. And Alabama, in terms of, as you said, defensively in the first half, you look up at halftime, I think Alabama had 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, and you're thinking, wow, this is probably the game Alabama wanted. But then you look at the scoreboard, and it's 17-0. And, of course, in the second quarter, what felt like what could have been a 10 or 14-point swing, and you also get your quarterback essentially knocked out of the game on the same play right. That he fumbles, loses the football. He's going to convert a third, loses the football, cracks a rib. Indiana goes down, goes up 17-0. And right then you felt like, yeah, with the way Indiana can shrink the game, control the game as much as anything else with that run game, you just didn't think Alabama was going to get enough possessions, and it was going to take a just absolute lights out performance in the third and fourth quarters. And we haven't seen enough of that from Alabama really over the second half of the season to think that that was coming against the quality opposition that they were up against.
Tough end of the year for Ty Simpson.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. And he's a gutty player, and I admire the way he repeatedly throughout the second half of the season declined to say anything was wrong with him physically. And I guess there's some strategy to that too, because you don't want to tip opposing defenses about where they can target you physically. But our beat writer at the Tuscaloosa News, Colin Gay, had a nice story the other day, kind of detailing what ailed Simpson throughout the second half, which was really, it was never reported during the year. He certainly was mum about it when he was asked about it. He never showed up on any official injury report. But from Colin's reporting, and by the way, tip of the hat to you, Travis, because I can remember you saying this very same thing on this podcast maybe about a month ago. But the beginning of the physical problems for Ty Simpson was the hit from Dylan Stewart in that South Carolina game.
I had no intel on that, but man, that was a wicked strike, right? And somehow, some way, as you started to realize he wasn't 100% down the stretch, that game and that shot specifically, it just made a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Big hit from Stewart, did something to Simpson's back. Took a couple shots in that Oklahoma game, the first Oklahoma game that didn't help matters. Ends up with some bursitis in the right elbow. Ended up with gastritis before the Iron Bowl, apparently. And then
from the pain meds, right? Is that what I read Collins reporting? It can have that effect on you. You know, when you're taking something to help with pain, it can upset your system, I think.
And then of course, ultimately, a broken rib in the Indiana game. And he gave it a go with one series in the second half, wasn't able to get it done. Obviously, he was medically cleared. It was probably just a pain tolerance thing. But Simpson yielded. Sounds like it was his decision that he didn't feel like he could help the team. So Austin Mack plays the balance of the second half. Real difficult situation for Austin Mack to be thrown into. Way down, obviously, on the scoreboard. The running game didn't help Austin Mack any more than it helped Ty Simpson. So he was – you talk about thrown to the wolves. That's what Austin Mack was. And I thought under the circumstances he did fine, but there was not going to be any comeback in the cards.
No, this was not going to be Atlanta in January of 2018, right, when Tua came out and replaced Jalen. And not just because of the quarterback difference, at least to this point with Austin Mack, and looking back at where we already knew Tua was at, even as a true freshman, the people around Tua that night, a good bit different than the people or the approach or whatever, the culmination of things that the offensive struggles and shortcomings played a big role in this season, not kind of roaring to the finish like a lot of people thought it might. I agree, though. I thought Austin Mack, given the circumstances, did about as well as you could hope.
Yeah. To what extent should some blame?
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Can be laid at the feet of the coaching staff just for the way this team kind of came out flat. And, you know, frankly, I saw some white flagging out there in the second half, as far as I'm concerned. I thought there was some quitting the Alabama team at a certain point in the second half. Got to be on the coaches to some extent.
I think so. I think there was, I don't know this, but I got to think in that locker room with Ty dealing with his situation, and especially the way that second quarter ended going into the halftime. Yeah. You put those things together, and I wasn't shocked to see that sort of response from Alabama. But to your point, somebody, and I'm sure someone tried, or some folks tried, you know, to say, look, you know, still got a chance. We've been in this situation before. All those things were run out there. But that first offensive series, when it was very obvious that Ty didn't have it, you know, I think that works both ways. I think if your quarterback comes out and is able to push through that, rally through that, and get you some points, at least it has an entirely different effect maybe on the defense. Yeah. But it was almost as if the defense understood that Ty wasn't going to be able to do it. And this isn't a knock on Ty. I mean, you got a cracked rib, probably breathing is tough at that point. It just, you know, the weight of the season, those type of things ultimately catch up with you, and you can only bang that drum so many times, you know, and that's one of the problems this team had. They had to go to that card too many times this year because they were in situations like Florida State at the half, you know, and Georgia. And I think that's the problem most Alabama fans have had with this, Chase, is that it's not so much losing to a really good team like Indiana or Georgia. It's that Alabama in two of its last three games, and really three of its four losses, just wasn't competitive for the four full quarters. That's where I think it sticks in the craw of most of the Crimson Tide fans.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. Situationally, the middle eight did not go well at all for Alabama in this game. And the middle 8 minutes I'm talking about, last four of the first half, first four of the second, that was a strong suit of Alabama for much of the season, certainly a strong suit for Alabama in the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw Ty Simpson at one point, maybe by week 7 or 8, had piled up, you know, 4 or 5 touchdown drives at least in the last minute of the first half. But what happened in the middle eight with Alabama was a big mess against Indiana, right? The offense obviously couldn't get on the scoreboard. Offense is getting the ball to start the second half. You need something to happen quickly. They do nothing. And then defensively, Indiana's first series of the second half, bang, bang, right down the field, touchdown. That's just an absolute killer. And by the way, Indiana had – almost 35 minutes of possession time. Georgia had 37 minutes of possession time. And to me, that's in both cases, that's on the offense because there are just way too many drives where the offense is three and out. And especially if you're trying to go tempo when you're three and out, you're not taking any time off the clock.
Yeah, it is. And it goes back to more often than not to one dimensional sort of situations, you know, that it's the analogy I've made to a credit card. When you're 21 years old and you get a credit card, and boy, it's just great. You know, it's like free money and you can get away with it for a while, but eventually the bill comes due. You can't control the game like you'd like to, which is kind of odd at the same time, because how many times did we see Alabama in the fourth quarter of games eat up like 8 minutes with fourth quarter drives without a run game? Right. And we saw it against Oklahoma in Tuscaloosa. We saw it in that South Carolina game. You know, they did it more than a couple of occasions. But, and also to your point about the middle four, even opening scripts, you know, the first drive, first possessions for Alabama offensively in the first half of the season, you could almost just count on the offense getting into the, to the end zone. But then it sort of switched in the second half. And then you start wondering, okay, you know, guys start realizing our script's not getting us in the end zone. Right. And that sort of can have an effect on a psyche or a confidence level of a quarterback and an offense in general. You know, I thought Ryan Grubb drew it up about as well as he knew how. But ultimately, it's a game still about blocking and tackling. And never has that been more on display than it was in Pasadena a couple of days ago. In this Rose Bowl, because that's essentially what Indiana does at a very high level. And I know we're going to bang on the offense, but boy, defense in the final game of the season wasn't anything to write home about, to your point earlier about that Indiana run game either.
No, the Indiana offense had its way with Alabama. Looking back, it's a little surprising that this first quarter was scoreless, right? You get beat 38-3. You'd think it'd take more than three quarters to do that, but that's all it took.
I think Indiana kicked that field goal in the first play of the second quarter, but it was still only a 3-0 game at that point, you know? And even at 10-0, again, with Alabama having the football, crossing midfield, you know, maybe you're going to get it to a one-score game with a field goal, or maybe you get in the end zone, it's a 10-7 game. But, boy, when it flipped totally the other way, you just didn't get the sense, because – Indiana wasn't going to help you like Oklahoma did. Indiana does not do that. Oklahoma will do it, you know, but Indiana is not going to do that.
From an optics standpoint, Travis, what did you make of Kalen DeBoer walking into that post-game presser and saying there's a thin line between what we had out there today and the top, which, of course, he's talking about a national championship. I kind of seized on that. I wrote my column off of that.
Yeah, you did.
You know what that reminded me of, Travis? You remember, of course, you and I well remember the movie Jaws, right?
Yeah.
You remember at the beginning of Jaws, when the medical examiner kind of gets coerced by the mayor on a cause of death, right, for that first victim, and he says, boating accident. It was a boating accident, right? Kalen DeBoer saying that's a thin line is like saying what happened out there today was a boating accident.
Well, you know, you, like the mayor, you know, you're trying to control the message. Yeah, it's not necessarily good for business of that mayor's town if you start announcing shark attacks.
Yeah,
you know. We're not that far away, you know. Well, definitely we're a good bit away by the end of the season. You can't argue with it. I mean, you lost by what was the cumulative point total? 20, lost by 21 to Georgia. It felt like 41,
right?
And lost by 35 to Indiana in the quarterfinals. You know, you can maybe make that statement if you make it to the semis or even the final and you just happen to get boat raced in the four or the championship game, but this is still the eight.
Yeah.
And you got run out of the building. So 21 plus 35 by my math, Chase, that's 56 points, which is a 28 point margin in each of those two games when you really played college football playoff competition late in the season.
Yeah, ugly for sure. I think just to kind of look at the season from 30,000 feet for a second, I think on one hand, you certainly have to give it to DeBoer and his staff that season two was more successful than season one. I don't think that can be argued. You qualified for the SEC title game.
We took a step.
For CFP. You win a CFP game.
Yeah.
So the trajectory is definitely gone up from year one to year two. However, when you bookend an 11-4 year with a really ugly loss to not a very good team in Florida State on one end, and then at the opposite end, you get manhandled by Indiana in a CFP quarterfinal, It just makes it a lot harder, I think, for fans to see the best of what came in between.
Yeah, and that was one of my points too. First impression, final impression for this team. It was a weird year. I will say that. Ups and downs, no doubt about it. I mean, you get hammered in the opener, get hammered in the last game of the year, but in between all that, you did go on the road and win in Athens. You know, you did beat Tennessee in Tuscaloosa. Tennessee didn't really beat anybody. Missouri and Tennessee, by the way, they were basically the same team this year. Neither one of them beat a team with a record better than 6-6. You know, you beat LSU, but LSU, you can kind of asterisk that one. You beat Auburn. You know, when you think about the wins that have escaped previous Alabama coaches and have gone a long way, and those coaches not being around for more than 4 or 5 years, Kalen DeBoer's already got all those wins, right? Yeah. I mean, in terms of the to-do list, the problem is part of that to-do list is national championship relevancy. And whereas I agree, you can very much make the claim that this team did take a step forward this year. It didn't feel like, maybe to Kalen's, you know, point there in the post game, that it really moved all that closer to the top of the mountain.
Yeah, I agree. I think obviously Georgia was the biggest win on the resume. Next biggest win for Alabama would be OU and the CFP. And then I think the third biggest win on the year for Alabama turned out to be Vanderbilt. Right.
Vanderbilt was a big win too. You're right. Absolutely. I agree. You know, but you know, you can kind of look at Vanderbilt too, even with that 10-2 record. And what were the wins for Vanderbilt this year?
Yeah.
Yep. Tennessee. I mean,
beat Tennessee,
beat Texas, lost Alabama. Yeah. I mean, you know, It's still again a step forward, but it's a big offseason, a big portal stretch coming up here, and also a lot of intrigue about for Kalen DeBoer. For me, this is kind of like that rest stop where everybody needs to get right for the rest of the drive, or as much as you possibly can. You need to get as right as you can right now with your roster, with your staff, you know, with everything, and make sure when you get back in the car and start that drive again, you're as good as you possibly can feel about the situation moving forward.
Yeah, let's go ahead and turn our attention to the offseason with that, Travis. A fine segue into what's ahead for this coaching staff. Obviously, a number of players have already declared they're going to be moving on in the portal. Moving on in the draft, of course, LT Overton said he's coming out for the draft. A few notable portal exits already. Wilkin Formby, who finally ended up starting at right guard, he's moving on in the portal. Rico Scott, wide receiver, moving on. Cole Adams, who I thought was real reliable as a guy who can catch punts, he's decided to move on, and that there'll certainly be several more, and I'm sure I'm leaving a couple out, right?
Yeah, I guess what I would ask of you at this point, which of these departures that we know of, and they've been pretty steady here in the last 24 hours or so, has maybe surprised you the most, or have any of them surprised you,
as far as
departures?
Yeah, I Formby surprised me just because he's a local guy and
deep ties guy. Yeah.
So kind of took me back a little bit that Formby decided to jump in the portal just because he's a hometowner. I'm not sure I can say I'm shocked about any of the others that I've seen though.
Yeah. I think you can draw lines between most of the other departures and why, and, you know, like with Rico Scott, you can kind of draw a direct connection to the emergence of Lottie Brooks, right? Formby's interesting for sure. And I guess if Paul Tyson can hit the portal, right? Anybody can hit the portal. But Paul Tyson wasn't a starter at quarterback, and he really right. wasn't going to sniff being a starter at quarterback. Wilkin Forby was at least through the end of this season a starter. What about indications that you take from some of these departures? I got to think with all the OLs that are hitting it, that are getting out, there must already be a sense among at least some of them that there is a changeover coming as far as portalers coming in to the program. That's kind of the way I look at that.
Maybe a staff change.
And that too, that's what I've talked about here on the channel too. Sometimes you can get indications about people who are leaving or staying even, or maybe they're not leaving and people are portaling out. So that can go both ways. Also, guys who maybe are developing, younger guys, maybe a Jackson Lloyd has given enough of an indication at this point that, look, he's going to be ready to go. And if you go with him and they keep Michael Carroll at tackle, you got your tackles for next year. And you don't know. Some guys may have, you know, moved to some other positions this year or at the end of the year to kind of do what they needed to do, but they see themselves as a tackle, not a guard. You know, I don't know that, but I know those type of things can certainly come into the mindset.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And from a staff standpoint, you know, 2 days before the Rose Bowl, one of the reporters, and I can't remember which one, got a hold of, sat down with Chris Kapilovic during the media free-for-all more or less asked pretty point blank, you know, what do you think your immediate future might hold? And Kapilovic said, well, I'm here today.
We're all day today. Yeah, I mean, that's what we don't know. That's what's going to be very fascinating as you move forward here. In terms of, again, you know, getting it situated the way you want it. And I think what we're seeing with the portal exits or the move to the portal is that I think that's part of this. You know, I mean, when you go down the list of not all of them, but these are a lot of Saban evaluations. These are a lot of Saban guys, aren't they? I mean, I just kind of look, I know Noah Carter isn't, you know, I know Lottie Brooks is still here. So that, you know, I mean, that's kind of an interesting way to look at it too, in terms of, all right, I'm getting my guys in here. You know, we're about to go way more with my evals. And that's the way we're moving forward.
Some NIL money definitely needs to be spent on portal offensive linemen.
It does.
No question.
It does. And
that's got to be priority. To me, that's got to be priority number one.
I don't disagree. Yeah. So, I mean, lines of scrimmage in general. I mean, because you're losing Tim Keenan. I think that, you know, London Simmons and some of these young guys, there's a lot of reason for optimism there, but you need something there too. Up front, you need playmakers. I think the Wolf position you feel okay about with Pierre, you think coming back, Quay Rousseau, you would think, Justin Hill played a lot of football at the Wolf this year. But really both lines of scrimmage is kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, no question about it. What about these pending CFP matchups real quick, Travis? You got Ole Miss taking on Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. That'll be on Jan 8. And Oregon taking on those Indiana Hoosiers Peach Bowl on Jan 9. Kind of hard, I think, Travis, for disaffected fans, right? Like fans of college football who don't have a rooting interest remaining among these four teams. Isn't Ole Miss kind of America's team now with the way things have gone with that coaching staff a little bit?
I got to think they are. Indiana's still up there, though, man. And for a couple reasons. They have come from the basement of college football in the last couple of years to this number one spot, and they just beat the hell out of Alabama. Boy, I mean, the Alabama non-enthusiasts, we will call them.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that Alabama lost to Indiana. They got thumped by Indiana. So there's a lot of impartial fans out there that I think are still going to be riding with the Hoosiers pretty good. But I agree. If it isn't, Ole Miss would be in there just for that unique sort of situation that you outlined that they're dealing with. And I don't think Georgia's really where Alabama's been in the last 20 years in terms of fatigue, you know, with people around the college football fan base landscape. But I do think there were probably a lot of people pulling for Ole Miss in that game against Georgia too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tough situation for those players. You hate it for those players. You really do. It seems like every day there's a report out there that some coach is going to walk just right in the middle of this playoff run. It speaks to how college sports have been turned upside down in the last few years and in so many different ways, and leave it to Lane Kiffin to shine the biggest light on it possible. So,
well, he can shine the biggest light on Lane is what Lane's really good at too.
Sure.
So, but it's going to be fascinating, the matchups. I mean, not so much Indiana, Oregon, because that's going to be a rematch. Still should be a really good game. But just the differences in Miami and Ole Miss and kind of how they go about it. Ole Miss likes to run the football, don't get me wrong. But with the emphasis on the line of scrimmage and those edge guys for Miami, and then Chambliss and then what he's able to do extending and the playmaker he is, that's going to be a fun one on Thursday night.
Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, I want to thank our viewers and listeners and ask you to contribute to Parker Covers Alabama if you can. ParkerCoversAlabama.com is a 501c3 nonprofit supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. It's named in honor of our good late friend, Mike Parker. Again, you can donate at ParkerCoversAlabama.com supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Closing out here, Travis, I guess with our last couple minutes, we could touch on Alabama basketball, which got off to an outstanding start on Saturday at home against the Kentucky Wildcats, lid lifter in conference play, and really a home route pretty much from start to finish. At one point, I think the lead was 21. Alabama ends up winning by 15. And mark it down as a program record fourth straight win over the Cats.
Yeah, it's bizarre world. We got Indiana thumping Alabama on the football field. Now we got Alabama owning Kentucky on the hardwoods. Although I would say relative to Indiana's football success historically, Alabama's basketball success checks in a good bit higher on that scale. But a strong performance. I mean, you didn't like the injuries to Amari Allen, Aiden Sherrell in the game. Allen comes back with the ankle. Tough, tough dude, man.
Yeah.
Houston Millett played great basketball. Holloway was great. I mean, when Alabama's guards play like they did against Kentucky, good luck.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sherrell, you wondered about the knee. I guess we'll find out more about that in the next couple of days. But a great start to SEC play. And it's tough when you're in Mark Pope's shoes right now and things aren't going well. It's kind of a honeymoon season for him up there last year. It can get noisy in a hurry up there in the Commonwealth.
Yeah. Yeah. Nate Oates, you know, as we know, he can chirp a little bit sometimes every once in a while, he might dig the knife in a little bit. So I think sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes maybe it's not so intentional. But some interesting remarks from him post game, talking about Kentucky and scouting Kentucky. And he said we just felt like they did not move the ball very well as a team. Tracked every assist Kentucky's had all season with the video team. And yeah. I think, gosh, I don't want to misquote Oates, and so I'll offer that caveat that I might not be remembering this exactly word for word, but I think he said they'd only had a handful of assists, maybe seven assists or something all year from the post out to the perimeter. And he's like, when they dump it in, they're not dumping it in to kick it. They're dumping it in to jam it.
Yeah, that's Chase Goodbread basketball. You know, that's your brand of ball. And Nate loves that because the way he looks at it, three's more than two. So even if you convert on some of those post touches, Good for you, especially when Alabama shooting the three, you know, at a high level. But yeah, I mean, a big one coming up now. It doesn't get any easier in this league, man. You go to Vanderbilt midweek. That's been a little bit of a house of horrors in the past. But yeah, I mean, Nate, that hurts Kentucky fans too, because they would love for Nate Oates right now to be the head coach in Lexington. Yes. And then to kind of just give them a public scout of the of their program right now when things aren't going so well. I don't think that was well received by BBN.
No, definitely not. Vanderbilt coming up this week as your midweeker. And, of course, Alabama will take on Texas at home in Coleman Coliseum on Saturday. So back-to-back home games for the Crimson Tide on back-to-back Saturdays. And then following that, it'll be a road trip to Starkville, take on those Mississippi State Bulldogs on January 13th. But Nate Oates' team off to a fine start in SEC play, did well in the rebounding department against the Cats, which was obviously an encouraging sign based on what we saw in non-conference play. And we will see how things progress. The Talking Tide podcast maybe becomes a little bit more irregular, Travis, right now here in the spring as we close things out on football and turn our attention to basketball. But we will definitely be getting together here and there talking Tide hoops.
Absolutely. And Ricky Smith right here in the show chat, and thanks to Donald and the rest of you, CC, that have chimed in here in the chat tonight. Ricky Smith in all caps. Says Alabama will win a basketball championship before we win a football championship again, Ricky said.
Right now it's hard to argue with, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you got to be in the mix. If you get in the mix, you got a shot, but we'll see. Ricky seems pretty adamant about it. I mean, he's all capsing it in here.
I don't know if I see the basketball team taking any ground home, at least not this year with the rebounding situation.
And even when you're great, it's hard, and it's getting harder in football. So it's not like, you know, you can say, well, it's just a two-team deal at the end of the season in football anymore. It's not, you know, and it's going to just expand and get bigger, it sounds like. So that path, I think football used to be the easiest of the championships to win, but it's growing in difficulty at this point. Just ask Ohio State and Georgia for more on that. You know, we're going to the semifinals, and you don't have those two making the trips.
Yeah. When you got to go play 16 games instead of 12 or 13 to win a natty, it becomes a different ball game.
Yeah.
Or even 17, depending on who you are.
And it's still single limb, you know, just like basketball. So, yep.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast. Apologies for the late start this evening. That would be the fault of yours truly, some technical difficulties that I was able to overcome.
Yeah,
but for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News, and we will talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.